Today, Sokol versus Atlantic Mutual. Okay, Mr. Creed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Creed. I represent Sokol & Company, which is a family-owned and operated food and food ingredients manufacturer located in Countryside, Illinois. The issue that we're here to discuss this morning is the lower court's erroneous ruling from our perspective concerning whether or not Sokol & Company was entitled to indemnity under its food industry's policy that was issued by Atlantic Mutual. There's three separate coverages that we believe were implicated by the loss here, and the lower court ruled on a very narrow ruling that there was no duty to defend in the absence of a lawsuit, and based on that absence of a duty to defend, there could be no duty to indemnify. We're here to tell you this morning, Your Honors, that there was a duty to indemnify, that the duty to indemnify is separate and apart from the duty to defend, and that the lower court was erroneous in ruling that the two duties should be analyzed together. In fact, we believe they should be analyzed separately. Given the facts in this case, that Sokol & Company manufactured peanut butter paste that was to be put into a cookie mix ingredient package, and that those products were manufactured in August of 2001. In October of 2001, after Sokol had shipped to its customer, Continental Mills, there was an analysis of the peanut butter paste, and it was determined to be off flavor. Now, opposing counsel has suggested that there was rancidity. That has never been established. There was nothing in the record that there was rancidity, but instead there was an off taste to the peanut butter paste, and that caused it to be unfit for human consumption. Based on the material that was in the peanut butter paste, there was a recall conducted by Continental Mills, and Continental Mills then contacted Sokol & Company in November and said that we want you to pay for this peanut butter paste that was off-flavored.
Counsel, your insuring agreement coverage language requires personal injury, which we don't have here, obviously, or property damage. What is the property damage?
There were two elements of property damage. One was property damage to the containers that when they had to be broken out and the peanut butter paste had to be taken out of the containers. And the second property damage...
How is that property damage?
That was the product had to be broken down and was not capable of being used.
How is property damage defined in your policy?
Property damage... There are...
Physical injury to tangible property.
Physical injury to tangible property or loss of use. And there was a loss of use to the product. In addition, Your Honor, I would direct your attention to Atlantic Mutual's declination letter of April 5th and also of June 10th, where in both letters the insurer in this case said that the change of the peanut butter met both the definitions of an occurrence and property damage as defined in the policies. So we have an admission by Atlantic Mutual that there was a change to the condition of the peanut butter paste that was property damage under the policy. They're now not allowed to go outside of those admissions, and under Federal Rule of Evidence 803, they're bound by those admissions.
Ms. Creed, if I may just follow up on Judge Sykes' question. In that definition of property, it says other than, quote, your product.
That's correct.
Yeah. So are we speaking about your product?
No. Our
is
product
the container?
was the peanut
container?
Butter paste.
You're making the distinction between the container?
Correct. The actual container that housed the entire cookie mix contained other ingredients that were assembled by Continental Mills.
What would you ascribe to the language, quote, your work in the definition of property?
Our work was the peanut butter paste that was contained in packets.
Well, and isn't that what's is it excluded under property in the context?
This is not a claim for Sokol to recover its own property damage, meaning the paste. It's for the damage to the product that was released to the end user, and we're not claiming for the actual ingredient of our peanut butter paste.
But that property damage has to be caused by an occurrence.
Correct.
And how does this meet the definition of an occurrence under the policy?
We also have an admission.
Okay, put the admissions aside.
Of an occurrence.
I'm focusing on the policy.
Okay.
Okay. How does the subsequent dismantling of the cookie mixes that was required because your product was bad constitute an occurrence? Doesn't an occurrence have to be accidental?
It has to be accidental, and there was this was not intended or and it was sudden. It was unexpected to have this peanut butter paste.
Well, the property damage that you're claiming occurred here was not accidental and it was not sudden. It was a deliberate response to the discovery of the bad peanut butter, right? And it was an attempt to repair that problem by substituting good peanut butter.
It was an attempt to repair a problem that would have been released to the
consumers. How does that constitute an occurrence under the policy, which is defined as an accident?
The occurrence is the change to the peanut butter paste that occurred, and that is what was sudden and unexpected. And
that's not the property damage that you're claiming. You see what I mean? The dots don't connect here.
Well, that is the change in the peanut butter paste was the occurrence that occasioned the dismantling, and it would be our contention that that was in order to remedy the condition that was occurred, that was a necessary result, and that there was a causation link there. And the occurrence of a condition, I'm sorry to go back to the admissions of the parties, but that was not an issue that was raised under the policy, and all of the parties proceeded as an occurrence having occurred. This is a food industry's insurance policy. These are the types of issues that occur in the food industry, and if you go to Outboard Marine, the condition of the occurrence as being sudden and unexpected was defined there, which would support Sokol and Company's claim that an occurrence had happened in this case. When we look at Judge Lefkoe's lower court opinion, she looked at the Lapham Hickey case, which involved a completely different type of policy. It involved a first-party policy where they were seeking damage in that case for the property of the insured, which is different from this case. In addition, in Lapham Hickey, that involved an environmental cleanup where the party had voluntarily begun investigating a cleanup, and which is different than this case, where a third party, Continental Mills, had made claim for the peanut butter paste and a lawsuit was inevitable. So the issue in Lapham Hickey was not who was going to pay for the entire cost of the cleanup. What the issue was there was whether or not they were going to charge the cost of investigation for investigating the environmental cleanup, whereas in this case, the insurer, Atlantic Mutual, had contracted to cover this type of loss. They had contracted.
Your contention is when the paste left your premises, it was all right. Is that agreed by opposing counsel that it was all right when they got it?
Well, I would have to say it was agreed only because they never did any discovery. They never did any investigation into the rancidity of the peanut butter paste. All they've done is use conclusions here to say that the paste was rancid without doing any kind of study.
Did they do a consumer test before they released
it? Yes, and Sokol and Company did extensive quality assurance and quality control to make sure that when the peanut butter paste left Sokol's control, it was fit for human consumption.
And when was it discovered to be non bad?
Yeah, okay. Several months after it left Sokol's control in August of 2001, November.
Had they already had the Central Mills or whatever the company
Continental is, Mills.
Continental Mills already put it out on the shelves of stores yet?
My understanding is that it had been packaged, but I don't believe that it had reached the shelves. But the recall that was required was done by Continental Mills, but it was agreed to by Sokol and Company that they didn't want this type of material out if there was this off flavor to it. There was also coverage under the policy for product recall, and Atlantic Mutual has taken issue with that, saying that it wasn't implicated, saying that there was no formal recall instituted by the government. That demonstrates a lack of understanding of how the food industry works. Normally, in a recall situation, there is no blanket order that comes down. What happens is the manufacturer becomes aware of some type of condition and then exercises voluntary efforts to remove it because of the of many things. One is being a good corporate citizen. Another is determining that you don't want to let that out onto the marketplace. And it befuddles me that they denied coverage on the product.
Did Sokol provide new paste, or did they go somewhere else?
Continental Mills went somewhere else for that. And part of Sokol's efforts to act quickly, they kept on Atlantic Mutual trying to get a decision, and months went by where Atlantic Mutual first said, by Jana Weber, we took her deposition, she said that there is elements of this loss that are covered, and then they wrote the April 5th, 2002 letter declining coverage and the June 10th, 2002 letter declining coverage. And at that point, Sokol said, we've got a problem here. We've got to deal with our customer, Continental Mills, and went out and settled the claim. Now Atlantic Mutual would like to say that they had some right to consent to that.
What was the? I saw the figure $69,000. What was the actual settlement amount?
Settlement amount was $75,441.20.
Just over the limit for action in this court, right? Or in the federal court?
That's right.
Why is it that the business risk exclusion doesn't exclude coverage here, even assuming we've got property damage caused by an occurrence?
The business risk exclusion?
No, exclusion M.
M? As in Mary?
M as in Mary. Damage to impaired property. Impaired property being defined as your work or your product that is deficient or defective.
They're
usually referred to as the business risk exclusion, and it has been invoked here, as I understand your opponent's argument.
The reason that... Okay, the reason that the exception 2M does not apply is because there was a sudden and accidental physical injury to the product. There's an exception to the exclusion. And that exception that you raise, Your Honor, does not apply to sudden and accidental physical injury to your products or your work after it has been put to its intended use.
What facts point to a sudden and accidental physical injury to the peanut butter here? It was just bad peanut butter.
Well,
it didn't taste right, as I understand the facts. So what is the fact of a sudden an accidental physical injury to
the fact that it left our control after it had been extensively tested by Sokol's quality assurance and quality control labs, and the fact that it went bad after that was, and the fact of the time frame, the temporal relationship of it leaving our facility and then being complained of in November of 2001 after it was manufactured in August, that made it sudden and accidental.
That's a real stretch of the term sudden and accidental, it sounds to me.
Well,
sounds rather gradual.
it wasn't gradual, and we would respectfully disagree. But I will sit down and preserve my rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Creed.
Thank you.
Ms. Holroth.
May it please the court, counsel, I think the panel has identified that there are numerous holes in this case that preclude the claim for indemnification of the $75,000 that Sokol voluntarily paid to Continental Mills. What I'd like to do is just go through and correct a few misstatements. You're absolutely correct, Judge Sykes. There's not a fact in this record to establish sudden and accidental. The facts that are cited in the complaint, the facts that have been cited by plaintiff's counsel today, is that the peanut butter left in August, and sometime in October or November, it was discovered that it was bad. So we've got a several-month time frame, which would be consistent with a gradual deterioration of a food product. The loss claim that was submitted by plaintiff's broker actually characterized the peanut butter as rancid. The complaint and other documents talk about an off taste. It's really not determinative whether it just tasted bad, whether it was rancid. There's still no factual evidence that there was any sort of sudden change here. I want to go back and talk about, I think it's very clear that we don't have property damage. There's nothing alleged. Remember, the peanut butter paste was in its own package here, and then that was incorporated into a larger box. But there's no allegation that those contents somehow damaged the rest of the contents of that box. What Continental Mills did after it discovered this bad taste is it took the sealed packet of peanut butter out, the one that Sokol provided, and it replaced it with good peanut butter, sealed up the package, and put it back on the shelves. So we don't have any property damage here. But even if we could, even if Sokol could overcome those hurdles, even if they could establish that there was some property damage, there's no coverage for so many other reasons. First of all, because there is no lawsuit. There was no duty to indemnify. There was no duty to defend. And Judge Lefkow correctly relied on the Lapham-Hickey case. One of the provisions in that policy talked about liability for damages. And the court's analysis, that's the Illinois Supreme Court's analysis, said where you have no lawsuit pending against the insured, there's no liability there. And that's the decision that Judge Lefkow relied upon. That decision is consistent and follows the Crum and Forster case from the Illinois Supreme Court case and the Outboard Marine case, which all say that where you have no duty to defend, you have no duty to indemnify.
I think that's an overreading of the Crum and Forster case. The language was admittedly very, very broad and mm-hmm. said exactly what you just said, where there's no duty to defend, there's no duty to indemnify, mm-hmm. but there was a qualifier in the facts of that case, which was that there was a lawsuit.
I absolutely...
And there was no duty to defend because the facts alleged in the lawsuit didn't even arguably fall within the coverages of the policy. And under those circumstances, the court said, we don't even have to get to the issue of a duty to defend because the duty to indemnify, the duty to indemnify because the duty to defend is broader and it's not even arguably present here, so... there's no duty to defend either. Where you have a fact pattern, as we do here, where there isn't a lawsuit that's been filed. It's just a claim, and that's a very common way that insurance claims are presented pre-lawsuit. The duty to defend is analyzed separately under standard insurance law. Isn't that right?
I agree with your assessment of Crum and Forster, but I think if you look at the Central Illinois case, which is the main case relied upon by Sokol, you have a discussion of exactly the principle I'm talking about, and it's at page 216. It's 821 Northeast 2nd. The Illinois Supreme Court, and this is a very recent case, just a few months old, in that case was looking at an excess policy, but it talked about the general proposition. It cited the Powerine case, which is a California Supreme Court case cited in our brief, and this is the general proposition. Where there is a duty to defend, there may be a duty to indemnify. But where there is no duty to defend, there cannot be a duty to indemnify. And the next line that the Illinois Supreme Court says, again, this is December of 2004, is We might agree with this conclusion if the policies at issue in the present case were standard CGL policies imposing both duties, and that's exactly what we have here. They're both the duty to defend, the duty to indemnify. So you've got a very recent affirmation of that general principle. Now, Sokol relies on that case to say, well, there was no lawsuit in Central Illinois, and they still found a duty to defend. But again, it's because it was an excess policy that didn't have any duty to defend. So we've got an affirmation of that principle. I would also direct the court's attention to the voluntary payment condition of the policy, which says that no insured will, except at the insured's own cost, voluntarily make a payment. And that's what they did here. So they do not get coverage here.
Doesn't that provision only apply where the insured is truly a volunteer?
Well,
if it's interpreted any other way, then the coverage language about, you know, the policy covering damages that the insured is legally obligated to pay would never kick in the case of a settlement.
Sokol is a volunteer here. Though the policy, one of the main provisions of the CGL policy is that the insurer has the right and the duty to defend the lawsuit seeking damages. In this instance, we don't know. There might have been great defenses to the claim that was raised. And if it had proceeded to suit and the insurer was then in a position to defend that lawsuit, there might be no liability and no payment at all. But by voluntarily making that payment before suit was filed, the insurer is deprived of ever making that showing. Now they're just stuck with whatever amount they settled with. So we do characterize Sokol as a volunteer. And even if they could get past that condition, you still have the business risk exclusion. There's no sudden and accidental loss. And you have the exclusion N, which is product recall exclusion. Now, Sokol tries to get back in to the endorsement that says recall expenses will be afforded under certain limited circumstances. But those circumstances are the recall is determined by the insured, Sokol, or a government body. That didn't happen here. The recall was determined and instituted by Continental Mills. The second provision of that endorsement is that the expenses for recall have to be incurred by Sokol. Again, not what happened here. They were incurred by Continental Mills and then Sokol reimbursed. So again, for all of these reasons and all of those set forth in our brief, there is no coverage for the amounts paid by Sokol. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Coker. Mr. Creed.
I'll be very brief, Your Honors. Thank you again. As to the property damage that you had inquired about, we do contend that it was the property damage to the boxes, the packages being unsealed and the contents removed, as well as the materials being placed in new package containers and the loss of use that was a consequence of that. That was contained in the affidavit of Sokol's employee that was not rebutted by Atlantic Mutual. Beyond that, the Silco case versus Home Insurance shows the controversy with the Latham-Hickey decision, and that is that subsequent decisions, Fogg Tire came along that said that there can be a duty to indemnify even in the absence of a duty to defend, and that Judge Lefkoe didn't consider the cases that followed Latham-Hickey when evaluating the duty to indemnify as opposed to the duty to defend. Counsel has cited the California rule where they're synonymous, but that's different here and should be considered different by the court, and we would ask that you reverse the judgment and enter a judgment in favor of Sokol & Company. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Creed. Thanks to both counsel, and the case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the third case of the day.